WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. This is Jason Mann, and with me is Josh Monkey Flip Hatchet. How are you doing today, Josh?
Wow, Monkey Flip, where did that one come from?
Oh, you know, old Monkey Flip, you know, back in the playground, that's what you were known as.
Yes, well, that was true, back in the playground.
Yeah.
Playground days, they used to monkey flip with the best of them.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I got it from.
Yeah.
I did my research, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got a big match to talk about today, continuing our series of WrestleMania main events, and today is one of, if not the biggest, Stone Cold Steve Austin against The Rock at WrestleMania 17, or as the kids called it, WrestleMania X7.
What kids called it that?
I don't know, Vince McMahon? He was a kid at heart. So.
Yes, he is, yes.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
Yeah, this definitely kind of the end of an era in many respects, I would have to say. You know, WCW had just died. In fact, it was just almost 10 years ago to the day that WCW went away. You know, WWE obviously had emerged from that era, the Monday Night War era, and was the conquering hero, so to speak, of that. And you know, they were really clicking really, really highly anticipated rematch between Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. They had, you know, wrestled at WrestleMania 15, had many other matches as well, but it had been a while. Austin was coming back from his injury and really had, you know, come back really, just really, really hot, and you know, had some great matches, and you basically came back where he had left off. And this was, you know, really, you know, close to the peak of my, you know, wrestling fandom, kind of my second wave as a, you know, as a college student and going into adulthood. And I imagine you were, you know, pretty much in the same boat, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. I was, this was, you know, you said end of an era. This was almost an end of an era, you know, just for me, you know, watching it. You know, this was one of the last major pay-per-views that I watched, you know, just kind of finishing up with college and everything like that, and this was kind of the last major things that I remembered from this era. So you're right, this was definitely one to watch. And you know, you mentioned that, and I'm not sure WWF or WWE wanted it to be the end of an era, but it was just kind of how it worked out, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing that, I mean, yeah, kind of the things that fueled the, you know, the Monday Night War, obviously, you know, Nitro had gone away, and, you know, Steve Austin as the conquering hero was about to go away, you know, the NWO had gone away. I mean, kind of, you didn't really realize it at the time, but everything that kind of brought in all those fans was sort of fading away. And I you know, I think WWE was sort of making a proactive effort to move to sort of move on to the next era, kind of move on to the next thing, to, you know, freshen up its talent. I think the Austin heel turn was kind of a way to, you know, freshen that character up, maybe even before it should have happened. But, you know, it didn't really work out, which we'll get into later. And, you know, and then, obviously, WWE's never had the popularity that it had at that point ever again, and probably never will.
You can definitely, you know, second guess whether, you know, they jumped the gun, or they could have, you know, this era could have lasted a little longer. But, you know, in one sense, I do give them credit that they were, you know, a little more proactive instead of reactive. You know, instead of, you know, waiting, you know, holding on too long to this era, like, you know, they've seemed to do so many times here in the last few years with know, whether it be Triple H or whoever, they, you know, at least for this, they really try to push towards something new, whether, you know, they could see the end of the road with this kind of group and this kind of, you know, focus, or what have you. But I do give them credit for at least trying something new before, you know, before they had, you know, so-called bottomed out with their current plan, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and you look at the previous era that where WWE had really gotten huge, the Hogan era. I mean, you know, Hogan was getting pretty stale those last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that if they had turned him heel, it really would have worked. But obviously, you know, when WCW did it years later, it, you know, was one of the contributing factors to the, you know, the big wrestling boom. So, you know, in that sense, yeah, they waited too long to kind of transition from Hogan to Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, and Diesel, or whoever, and then, you know, had a number of lean years before they were able to click into the Austin era. And yeah, you wonder if, you know, if they had tried to move on from Hogan earlier, to, you know, and moved on from kind of like the muscle bound guys to more of the technical wrestling guys, whether that would have been a benefit or not, who knows, obviously. And that's kind of going away from the point of this match anyway. But, you know, this is among the contenders, I would say, for best WrestleMania main event ever. You know, if you call it the best, I wouldn't give you strong arguments. I do think that, you know, one thing that I noticed right away rewatching, because it had been probably a few years since I'd seen it. I've seen it, you know, I mean, maybe 10 times or so. Just a level of intensity that just was stunning.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was like a big time boxing match or something where, you know, the crowd was excited throughout the show, but then once this came, you know, it was just like crazy. I mean, people were, you knew that this was the match that everyone came to see. And you could notice that with the wrestlers too. They kind of, you know, with Austin and The Rock, they knew the moment, the magnitude of the moment, and you could sense it right away.
Yeah, the crowd was insane here. I mean, they were really just, I mean, and they were insanely into Austin. Was, you know, they were clearly rooting for Austin. Although, you know, Rock didn't really get a lot of boos. Like, you know, there were a few sequences where he got booed mildly, but it wasn't like in the WrestleManias, like the next year with Hogan, like he was pretty, you know, decently loudly booed. And, you know, there were times when he was pretty loudly booed, but here I didn't think there was as much of that. It was more of a pro Austin crowd. They liked Rock fine, but they wanted to, you know, see Austin win. They wanted to see him be the conquering hero. So,
yeah, definitely.
And they didn't have a problem with however he ended up doing it as well. So, you know, the one thing I always thought was weird, because I watched this, you know, as it was happening, when Jim Ross, right before, you know, I think it's Finkel who makes the announcement that it's no disqualification, and then he makes a big deal about, like, oh, you know, when did that happen? Which I really thought just was like, when I heard him say that, I'm like, well, Austin's turning here. I mean, you know, and I mean, because there was no other, I don't know, it just seemed like it was foreshadowing that too much. I don't know if you remember that or if you had the same feeling or not, but I thought, like, oh, and the other thing is that basically every main event from 1998 to, you know, gosh, 2002 or 3 or 4 or whatever was a no disqualification match almost without fail. I mean, even if they weren't, like, technically no disqualification matches, you know, they acted as if they were not. So
yeah, that's a good point that you make, that where you could pick up on that, because you're right. I mean, it something like that in a main event, that should be, you know, really a huge deal.
Yeah. I mean, it was clearly, the intention obviously was to set up the story that they told in the match, but I just thought, like, wow, that's just a real huge tell, so to speak, you know. I don't know. But anyway, as far as the match goes, I think just it's just dizzying from, you know, from start to finish. I mean, you know, Austin attacks right away. They, you know, gets the Fez press and the elbow drops. Then Rock kind of gets a swinging neck breaker, and they tries the Rock bottom. But then Austin tries the stunner, and then Rock tries the stunner, and then Austin just chucks Rock out to the floor. I mean, just, you know, really, like, it's really hard. Just, you know, Rock gets sent over. Just really, you know, dizzying intense action right away.
Yeah, that was neat to see. Just the pace that these guys were setting. You know, just 2 years later, after, or, you know, 2 years following that their first WrestleMania match, and it was pretty cool to see. You know, it just showed you how much they had kind of grown together and how well they had meshed, you know, as wrestling opponents, you know.
Yeah.
By this point.
Yeah, and you know, for the 15 match, I didn't really care much for the time, but when rewatching it, thought was better and had a lot of intensity to it as well. But this is just another level. It really is.
Yeah, just a better pace, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know, and the intensity of how they brawl. I mean, they really make it into a, you know, like you said, like a heavyweight boxing fight. Like, obviously, you know, heavyweight boxing fights don't go outside of the ring and don't use tables and don't use weapons and stuff like that. But it's like, it's a real, like, it felt like a real, you know, huge fight, you know. I mean, they're just really, like, you know, they're really going after each other. And, you know, they just really, I don't know, just a really very, very, you know, intense thing, like I keep saying. And, you know, like Rock repeatedly bashing Austin's head on the timekeeper's table, and you know what you see all the time, but it's just another level of, you know, intensity. And you know, and they really, you know, they're, I guess one of the early key moments is they go outside right after Rock bashing Austin's head on the timekeeper's table. Then Austin ends up grabbing the bell from the corner and striking Rock in the head, already drawing blood. And at this point, you know, Austin just, you know, goes after the cut with like the punches and slams his head at the table. And you can tell that Austin is acting in a heelish manner here. You know, that's another kind of setting up the foreshadowing, I guess, for the end. I mean, he's really, like, you know, he's not afraid to break all the rules, and they, you know, go into the kind of the story of him using a lot of like his old tricks of when he was heel. You know, Paul Heyman, who's doing the color commentator here instead of Lawler, he you know, brings up just, you know, like when Austin later goes for the $1 million dream, like it's the idea that he hasn't used that hold since he was, you know, the ringmaster, you know, 3 years before, you know, which is kind of funny because it's a sleeper hold, but you know, they were able, I liked how they were able to incorporate that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right about the, you know, Austin pretty much, you know, breaking out new things, and you know, rewatching it, you can definitely see the foreshadowing.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, of course, you know, and also, you know, he's, you know, when they go into the ring and Austin punches the Rock repeatedly down and mounts him and chokes him and, you know, tries slamming his head, the turnbuckle had been exposed earlier, although Rock is able to actually get it. And they, and this is kind of the point where when, Rock's getting control, you can kind of hear like the boos are starting to get a little louder. Like I said, I think they're milder than other times when Rock's been booed, but still, you know, they're definitely, it's not a surprise. I mean, they're in Houston and, you know, and, yeah. And Austin is a folk hero everywhere, but particularly in Texas, you know? Then later on, or not too much later on, after Austin kind of takes control for a while, and then Rock's able to throw Austin into the exposed turnbuckle, and then, you know, they're both bleeding. So, and then Rock goes and gets the ring bell and just nails him really hard in the face, although only gets two on that. And Rock just keeps punching Austin, who sort of just keeps, like, staggering around. And, you know, they... and then Rock elbows Austin's neck on the apron, and they end up going outside, and then Austin wins the fight outside, and they end up doing the catapult spot where Rock's head goes into the ring post, and then Austin, you know, just grabs a monitor and just nails him. I mean, this is really, you know, this is what you would think of as a blood feud when, you know, they had built this up as like an I respect you type feud, but I really want the belt kind of thing, you know?
Exactly. That's exactly the way I was thinking about that when, you know, when you just said that, is this, that's kind of how I viewed it. You know, they didn't hate each other, but, you know, this match just went to show you how important winning was to them. You know, they were willing to do everything, you know, punish this guy as much as possible, take as much punishment as possible to win. And that was a cool little underlying thing throughout the whole match.
Yeah, the build of this match also managed to make something involving a Limp Bizkit song actually pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, if you've never seen the video package for this match, you should YouTube it because it is even though it's set to a Limp Bizkit song, it's one of the like five best video packages they've ever done for a match. I mean, it's just incredible the way it set it up and the way they actually like timed it with the music was really cool. But
Yeah.
I guess we didn't really talk about the build to the match too much. I thought there's like it was basically Austin had come back, he feuded with Triple H. He actually lost to Triple H at the pay-per-view before, although it was sort of like a fluke loss, and he'd already had the title shot because he'd won the Royal Rumble. And then Rock basically just beat Angle for the title at No Way Out, and that was basically what they did. And then they just basically did promos against each other. I think they got physical at the end, but it was mostly like I seem to recall them doing like drinking beer together, and then like sort of like doing like a they would like toast each other, but like he would like swing the beer really hard, just kind of like as a like a I don't know, it's hard to describe, but just sort of like a punk thing kind of deal. I don't know. So So then we kind of we're both bloody, and we've done a bunch of at this point, after Austin hits Rock with the monitor, he drags him in the ring, only gets two, and then he slowly pulls him up, and he raises his fingers and he tries the stunner, but Rock is able to actually catch the foot, and then he locks into the sharpshooter, which and both are bloody at this point, and JR even explicitly references the Bret Austin at WrestleMania 13. They basically take that famous sequence, which I don't know, at the time I was kind of like, it's like, oh, they're just kind of recycling it a little bit, but I don't know. They definitely, they made it their own too, and obviously it kind of fit into the whole, Austin revisiting kind of a lot of the past things he did in his career, to kind of get to this point. So, you're kind of, if you think of this as sort of like the Ballad of Stone Cold that ends with him, becoming a heel and a coward, then, I guess it fits into it pretty well.
That's, seeing this sequence, it makes you think of that, but I didn't have a problem with it, and I thought it was kind of cool how they did it. If something works once and it's two good wrestlers doing it again, I have no problem with it.
I mean, it could have come, it definitely could have come across as like recycling something like that, but I guess with the rest of the match, they were able to make it in, their own too. Another spot they borrow later is when Austin does the Million Dollar Dream, as we talked about, and then Rock actually, pushes his foot off the rope and almost gets the pin, which is also the finish of the Bret and Austin's first match, their Survivor Series 96 match, also the finish of the Bret Hart Piper WrestleMania 8 match as well, so which are all good matches and you should watch if you have not. Anyway, but before then, eventually Austin's able to break the sharpshooter, and Rock ends up trying another. Sort of does some trash talking, and then Austin's able to lock in his own sharpshooter that Rock powers out of all things. Which and I guess it's sort of Rock being the more sort of being more of the subtle babyface, although the fans aren't really taking to him that way. And Austin gets another sharpshooter, which Rock stretched to the ropes, although Austin refuses to let it go at first, which, it's a no DQ match, so he can do that all he wants to. And then we do the Million Dollar Dream thing, which we talked about before, and then and Rock's actually able to get his own stunner after that, and then gets a out of nowhere, which is pretty awesome. And then the slow cover, but he only gets two, which the crowd is very excited when he kicks out of that, but is very stunned when he hits it. That was a good response. And then Vince McMahon comes out, and I don't know. We can talk sort of about the end, about whether Vince's role in this match really was the right thing to do. but you know, when he came out, I definitely groaned at the time.
Me too.
Just, I don't know, him being involved in another WrestleMania. I mean, he was involved in the 15 one, and he was involved in the 2000 WrestleMania main event, actually with a finish quite similar to the one here, where he ends up scoring Rock out of the title. So and turning heel. Well, he was a heel here, I guess. Austin was the one turning heel, but regardless. Rock is able to get the People's Elbow for two, but Vince pulls him off, and Rock chases after him. Then he runs into the ring, and then Austin hits Stone Rock Bottom for two. And this is also the early stages of the whole kind of incorporating the doing each other's finishers in big matches, and also kicking out of finishers multiple times. It hadn't been kind of a common thing until, at least certainly the doing each other's finishers. That wasn't really a common thing until, it seems like a 2001 thing to do. I don't know if you remember it being then or if you remember it being earlier.
Yeah, I think it was probably right around then, really. I remember Rock and Austin maybe doing it a few times, but that seemed like the exception to it, where those guys would seem like the only guys that would do that.
Mm-hmm. After that, then Rock sets up the stunner, but Rock pushes him into the ref, and then there's a low blow by Austin, and then Austin directs Vince to get the chair. He holds up Rock, and then Vince nails him with the chair, and then Vince revives the ref and pushes him toward to make the cover, but it only gets two. So Austin teases another chair shot, but Rock gets the Rock Bottom out of nowhere. But Vince comes in and beats up the ref before he can make the count. And Austin hits the stunner, but then Rock kicks out again. I love the look on Austin's face. You know, he's bloody, and he's just exasperated. Or I don't know if exasperated is the right word, but he's just, like, baffled, I guess. And he got like a psychotic, like, you know, I'm going to kill this guy, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's like, I mean, with the blood and, you know, the blue eyes, I mean, he looks crazy. And then it's like ends up like handing him the chair, and then he nails Rock into the face really hard with the chair. But then it only gets two, and that gets actually a big pop. And then Austin, again, you know, even more so with the frustration. And then he stands on top of him and pounds him down with about 14 different chair shots, like a different, you know, like in his chest and his back and his leg. And then finally, like, covers him. And then that's it. And that's the three. So and then, the famous scene where Austin is face to face with Vince, and they shake hands, and then JR just, you know, like, can't believe it, you know. In fact, they share a beer together, and JR, in fact, says, "Son of a bitch, I don't believe this," you know, and that Austin has sold his soul to Satan himself. So, and they basically drink beer right on top of Rock. And by the way, fans are going absolutely nuts that Austin, like, has won the title. Like, there's no booing here whatsoever. And I don't think this lessened the reaction at one bit to this. So
no, not it kind of didn't hit him right away. They just cared that he won.
But even when it was evident, I don't think anybody booed. You know, I think people were, you know, fine with this. So I just wonder, like, do you think that WWE believed that they were going to be able to get people to boo Steve Austin and cheer The Rock by the end of this?
I think there was part of it, whether it be the company as a whole or maybe just Vince's ego or something of that nature, where they thought, we're so good at telling this story and we're so good at what we do, we're going to take one of the biggest baby faces in WWE history and make him a heel, and people are going to hate him because that's how good we are at what we do. I think there was part of that in their thinking. And maybe it clouded their better judgment of, you know, will this really work? Because, you know, I'm not sure. You know, it's obviously easy to sit back now and say it didn't work, but, you know, I don't think Austin was stale by any means, and you know, this crowd and the reaction that he got leading up to WrestleMania, certainly proved that. And, you know, obviously it was a huge shock, but, you know, I don't know. That's one of my, you know, great what ifs is what could have happened if he didn't turn heel? How much longer could this, you know, era have gone?
Yeah. And that's a really, really hard question to answer. You know, because they still, I mean, they had obviously the WCW thing, which, you know, even though that, you know, really bottomed out big time, was a hot thing for a little bit. And if they had positioned Austin as the, you know, as the hero and, you know, against WCW as the villains and made WCW strong, but then, you know, had WWE conquer in the end, I think that could have been another year of, you know, of strong stuff if they, you know, brought in a few of the bigger WCW guys. And, you know, we don't need to rehash all that, but, honestly, yeah, I think this was an honest effort, and I think that they wanted, you know, they basically, like we talked about, they wanted to get ahead of, they wanted to do it before Austin got stale and old and before they had a decline. And, you know, maybe they felt like they could do anything they wanted. I mean, they just beaten WCW, you know, they just, you know, they were alone on top of the wrestling world. They probably figured, well, all the people who are watching Nitro have no choice but to watch us, and, you know, and then, which of course really all ended up happening was that the people who were watching Nitro just stopped watching wrestling. But, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if they really could have believed that, you know, I don't know. I do think that if I had been in their position, I do think probably that I would have believed that if Austin and Vince shook hands, the fans would have booed that even in this atmosphere. You know, like in theory, you know, I don't know. And I mean, people started booing Austin later, but, and you know, Austin did a fantastic job at being a heel. Like everything he did here was great. I mean, he was tremendously entertaining at that character, but you know, no one, it was very clear, you know, a month or two into it that people did not want to see him do that. I mean, they had a, you know, a huge decline in their, you know, in their ratings and their business and everything. And I mean, that was, you know, that was basically the single reason is because, you know, people didn't want to see that. People didn't want to see Austin and McMahon aligned together. That just was, you know, I don't know, just was, I think it too fundamentally betrayed like the memories, you know, they'd developed of Austin.
Yeah.
You know, it was just too much. It was just something, you know, you felt like you can't do. And you know, obviously they didn't know that when they did it the first time, but you know, what gets me is, you know, they did, of course, the invasion, and then they had Austin, you know, sort of come back. You know, he was sort of like, they were portraying Austin as sort of lost and, you know, sort of being paranoid and if, you know, and then they did that big famous thing where they just have that big wild brawl in the ring, and the WCW and ECW guys are beating up Team WWF, and then Austin, you know, decides to come back and then beat everybody up, and then it's like the five guys standing tall in the ring, and that's right what they do before the invasion. And I think that's proof that if they just kind of like hit the reset button and just been like, okay, well, forget about this and Austin's a hero again, I think that would have been fine. I think fans would have accepted that, and I think they could have recovered from it. But I don't understand the second heel turn. Like, I don't understand like why they thought it was going to work the second time, because I think very clearly at that point there was no way.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think. You know, it maybe just goes back to, you know, like what I said, you know, maybe it's ego that they're saying we can get anybody over in the role and in position that we want them to, and we're going to keep doing it until it works because we know we can. And an interesting thing that you had said is just people really couldn't get behind, you know, Austin and McMahon, you know, on the same team. And it just, you know, for me, it was just the case of, you know, Austin, you know, beating up McMahon for years and years and years. And, you know, it just really hit home to me and so many other people that, you know, it was almost like, well, man, I just wasted 3 years or whatever it was, you know,
right,
to do this. And now they're on the same team. What was all that about? And, you know, even when Hulk Hogan, you know, in the 80s was everyone's hero and every kid's, you know, childhood was wishing they were Hulk Hogan and loving Hulk Hogan. So his heel turn wasn't, you know, till, you know, almost 10 years later.
Right.
You know, where those feelings had long evaporated, and there was enough, you know, disconnect between good guy Hulk and bad guy Hulk that, you know, that it didn't matter. Where in this case it was, you know, it was so close together, and Austin was still so strong as a baby face that, you know, I think that soured a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, he was a folk hero. I mean, you know, it was just, yep, beyond like him being like the, you know, the top babyface. I mean, he was a, you know, and yeah, I definitely felt less excited about wrestling after this happened. You know, I just, yeah, you know, and you know, I wonder if it's sort of like what Cavaliers fans felt like, you know, with the decision with LeBron James, like, where, you know, they felt betrayed by what he did, you know, rightly or wrongly or whatever. But, and they felt like it invalidated the great years that he gave them because, you know, of how it ended, you know, and it maybe there's something like that to the way, you know, Vince, you know, the way it was when, you know, he shook Vince's hand. Like, I wonder if they had done the heel turn without Vince being involved, if they had just had Austin basically, you know, do almost everything he did here, except just Vince not being involved in it, but using every underhanded tactic he could to actually win the match. And then, you know, you have JR be like, you know, I can't believe how far Austin went, or something along those lines. And then maybe the next night you do kind of what they did with, Austin and Triple H aligning together, which also was a weird dynamic, but I don't think it was nearly as weird as, Austin and, McMahon, you know, being together, you know?
Well, I agree. Austin, this I agree with you 100% that if McMahon wouldn't have been involved, I think, you know, I'm not saying it would have worked, but I think it would have had a much, much better chance of working. You know, maybe you can position it as Austin's, you know, he's getting old and desperate, and he's going to do anything now to stay on top, even if it means being a bad guy. But, you know, teaming up with McMahon was just like one step too far, one step over the line that no one could really get behind after all they had been through with him.
Yeah. But, you know, now looking back on it, you know, 10 years later and having a little bit less, like, those emotions kind of, you know, dissipating now, you know, because, you know, obviously, you know, what's happened has happened and, you know, everyone's, you know, gone on to do lots of different things and whatever. I mean, the execution of it, the way it was done, whether it was the right thing to do or not, the way it was done was just, everyone did play their role excellently. I mean, even Vince, I mean, you know, the expressions that they share. I mean, there really is, you know, when JR, you know, says like he sold his soul to Satan. I mean, the look on McMahon's face when he says that is, you know, is, I mean, it's a satanic look basically. So, you know, I will say that, you know, kind of divorced from whether it was the right thing to do, it certainly was a very, very well told story on everyone's part.
Oh yeah, I agree with that for sure. But you know, with Austin, Rock, and McMahon, I mean, you have three guys that could pretty much tell you any story you'd want to know. You know, whether, you know, regardless of their roles. I mean, and you're right. You know, they did it very well. You know, they couldn't have played out the part any better, but,
right,
you know, like you said earlier, wrongly, they did a great job in that role.
Yeah. I mean, it's outstanding performances. That's outstanding storytelling. It just, you know, was a, you know, not a, you know, commercial success. And in fact, quite the opposite, you know, well, obviously the show was a commercial success. The aftermath was not a commercial success, you know.
Well, and I will say this, you know, as well as everyone, played out their parts in this and setting up the Austin heel turn. You know, when I think about, you know, think back about Austin, you know, and you know, he was kind of my you know, obviously he was my favorite wrestler through that whole era. And, you know, there's just that sore spot right there, you know, in this kind of whole thing where, man, he was so great and it almost had to end like this on this bad note. And it's just kind of that little, you know, even 10 years later, there's still that little sour taste for me when I think about like his career, and I think back to watching wrestling in that era, you know, for me, and you know, It may be silly, but that's just kind of how I feel, you know, even still.
Yeah, no, I completely understand, and you know, I really feel like that, especially after kind of the heel run ended, and then he turned back, and it was just he wasn't getting the same reaction anymore, and then he kind of fell into, you know, at the next WrestleMania he was in, you know, against Scott Hall, and then a match that wasn't very good, and was sort of, you know, moved to the mid level, and then he just, you know, kind of had some, you know, personal issues and left WWE for a while, and then when he came back, he, you know, health issues basically ended his career. I mean, he had another nice match with Rock at WrestleMania 19, but those, you know, last 2 years of Austin's career were definitely, you know, mixed at best, and you know, and it feels like, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, the health issues were going to get Austin in the end, you know, pretty much no matter what, just, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, I did feel like the last couple years of his career could have really been, you know, could have really been special. And I, you know, and that's another thing. I mean, kind of, you know, Rock, or I'm sorry, Austin at the time was like the undisputed number one guy and Rock was number two. But, you know, with those last couple of years, I mean, you know, now Rock's kind of remembered as the number one guy and Austin number two, or they're both kind of being, you know, close to the same, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, Rock's great. There's nothing wrong with that, but it, you know, it's like, you know, to me, Austin was the Hogan of that era. Yes. And that's not really necessarily how history will probably remember it, because, you know, Austin just didn't have that longevity.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And that's kind of the like, I don't, it's not like sad or anything, but, you know, in a sense it is, you know, for me as a wrestling fan in that era, 'cause, you know, it was almost like we didn't get everything out of it that we could have, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Austin,
although this was a great match.
Yeah. And, you know, and Austin, like, it seems like post wrestling, he's really, you know, he seems like he's a guy who enjoys himself, and he, you know, he's, you know, had a decent acting career, and it seems like he is a guy who doesn't really miss wrestling too much. He's willing to still be a part of it, you know, when they ask him to, but it's not like he's like, you know, apparently he's healthy enough that he could do another, or at least a few years ago was healthy enough that he could have done another match if he wanted to, but just didn't really work out. And I, you know, it's nice that he doesn't need wrestling anymore. It's not like he's like one of these, like, you know, bitter old broken down guys who, you know, has to come back because they went through all their money and all that. So there's something nice about that, you know, which is, you know, more than you can really say for, you know, Flair and Hogan, unfortunately, who, you know, obviously have been wrestling, or at least being involved, you know, at an advanced age, and put in some situations that, you know, seem undignified for their age. So
yeah, Austin definitely didn't turn into a sad story, and that's definitely a positive out of all this, that he's, you know, managed to you know, take care of himself, you know, both physically and you know mentally and everything. You know, he's not broken down and poor and you know, extremely overweight and just a, you know, substance abuse and all this stuff. You know, he seems like he's in a pretty good place, which is always good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anything else you want to bring up as far as the match goes?
Well, you know, like we said, you know, this is just a great match, and, you know, historically, you know, this is just a vitally important match too. I mean, it's got to be what, top two or top three?
Yeah,
when everything's considered.
Yeah, I mean, I you could argue number one. I think. I mean, I would say the candidates for me are this, maybe WrestleMania 20. You know, the Benoit, Triple H, Shawn Michaels three way. You know, I would put WrestleMania 26, the Shawn Michaels and Undertaker match, and then actually the other one that I, you know, may surprise people, which I'll talk about on a different podcast, is WrestleMania 23, John Cena against Shawn Michaels. That one I really think is, you know, a candidate as well. So, but I, you know, I would say, you know, you could call it number one, you call it two or three. You know, it's definitely in that league.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So, all right, Josh. Well, thanks a lot for reviewing this with me, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll have another show you can check out tomorrow, and we'll have them all the way through WrestleMania. So thanks and goodbye.